G'day, Barra here. Thanks for downloading another Dead Set Legends podcast with Mark Reddings and Andrew Embley.
And this week we've chatted to young up-and-coming diving sensation Teju Williamson.
We spoke with Don Pike, head of the West Coast Eagles clash against Collingwood.
And we chatted to cricket legend Adam Gilchrist about his thoughts on the second Ashes test.
And a very special guest in the studio, a wonderful young lady. She's at MLC school and she's just had a big couple of weeks. She recently finished fifth at the Senior Diving World Cup event in Spain, if you don't mind. And just last week won gold at the Australian Junior Diving Championships in Sydney. Her name is Teju Williamson, and I think you did a story on Today Tonight on Teju.
I did indeed, and it was a pleasure. Although, I have to admit, just watching Teju, and welcome to you, Teju, getting up on that 10-metre platform and diving, it doesn't sound much when you say it quickly, but it is a frightening thought. How do you do it?
With a lot of courage, I guess. I'm not one of those fearless divers, but you just have to kind of suck it up and do it.
It's so high, 10 metres. Until you get up there, you don't realise, do you? When you look down, you go, that's it, I'm walking down. Did you have a hero? Did you have a model, or was it a role model, or was it more just you went from gymnastics into diving?
I just kind of went straight into it because I didn't really know what the sport was at first. I just kind of kept doing it. I was a bit too young to know any consequences.
How many hours do you spend diving? How much training do you do?
Probably about 27, 20 hours a week.
Really? And how do you fit the violin in then?
In the evenings after training.
Oh, you're amazing.
And then there's homework, of course. You're 11, so it's an important 12 months coming up for you.
Yeah, definitely.
And you're doing year 12 music as well.
Yeah, it's tough.
How are you going with that balance? What do you do?
I just trying to maximise the time that I have and just prioritise all the stuff I have to do.
You had any close calls? Are you coming off the board there or off the platform?
No, I've been quite lucky. I've seen a lot of other people, but I haven't had anything yet.
Recently, we saw those Korean guys. Did you see them do those belly flops and the back hit their backs? Even the guns can mess up.
So, Teju, you were doing a little bit of gymnastics early, and then can you tell us what did you do to actually get yourself involved in diving?
I just did a holiday course, and I just tried it out to see what it was like, and I was good at it, so I just kept doing it. I didn't really know what was happening. I decided that diving was the same as gymnastics but into water.
And take us back to that first time when you're on the 10 metre platform. Tell us how you were feeling before you jumped in.
I was really nervous. I didn't want to do it. The only reason I jumped off was because my friend said if I didn't, I'd have to give her money.
Oh. Now, can I ask, did you go feet first or did you actually dive in?
Oh, definitely feet first.
Oh, dear.
It was quite a while after that it was hands first.
And you're part of the WAIS program and Shannon Roy is your coach and obviously doing a great job and you're building towards hopefully the Olympics, maybe not next year, but in 4 years from now. People obviously can't see you now. You're 4'9". I know divers aren't big, but you're very petite. Does that help you or hinder you when it comes to your sport?
It definitely helps. A little bit taller would be okay as well, but it definitely helps with the rotations and spinning fast, which is a good thing.
And why do they use those towels when they get out? You know how you see them get out of the water and they towel off, and what's that all about? Is that just look better, or is there an actual reason for that?
No, so that you can dry off the next dive, because when you go into the tuck, you don't want to be wet and slippery trying to grab. Otherwise, you'll slip out and probably belly flop.
Adrian used to use one after playing for Perth in the football because his team had been toweled up very regularly.
Actually, I've got to tell you, Tazer, I was the champion bomber at the Manuka Pool in Canberra for many, many years. So I can relate to where you're at. Have you any good at bombing, you blokes?
Only the home pool, but
I was the best.
What about, so we talked about the Olympics, which is a fair way down the track. What is the event that's sort of in the line of sight? Is it the Commonwealth Games in the Gold Coast, maybe?
Yeah, definitely Com Games in the Gold Coast. That'll be great. And it's a hometown. You'll have lots of supporters. It's definitely a goal.
So what would be between the Olympics and, say, playing for the Australian Symphony Orchestra, would it be? Would that be a goal in the music side? Or what's a big goal for violin?
I don't really have any goals for violin. I just want to kind of keep it going and just have fun with it. It's not like I'm trying to get somewhere with it particularly. Just enjoy it.
But your mum and dad, they're obviously hoping that you do well with diving. Schoolwork's got to be number one priority. Yeah. Just for all those teenagers out there listening, correct?
Definitely.
sounds like you've got a really good balance at the moment. Obviously, yeah. Your diving is something that you really love, but you're obviously passionate about the violin as well. So I know when I played at the West Coast Eagles, John Worsfold was really big on guys doing things outside of actually playing football. So whatever your passion was, to continue to do that, and that'll help create the balance. So I certainly encourage you to keep enjoying yourself and doing all those things.
Thanks.
Mike Etwusha, who plays the piano alongside Teju with the violin, and we've got ourselves half a music set up.
We'll see you at the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games, I reckon. I reckon you'll be there. Actually, we won't be there. We'll be retired. Good on you. Thanks for joining us, eh? Wish
Thanks
you all the
for
best.
Having me.
If the Eagles play the Dockers tomorrow, who wins?
Well, I think Eagles are a big chance.
Well, let's ask someone inside the camp. One of the Eagles greats, premiership player, Don Pike, assistant coach, joins us on the line. Pikey, beautiful timing. You probably hung up after that question. G'day, Pikey.
Good morning, Brad. How you going?
Skeet is just asking those ones you don't want to be asked. If there was a derby on right now, Pikey, would you beat the Dockers, do you think?
Let's focus on Collingwood.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, Pikey, Collingwood have lost their last three, but would it be fair to say that their results haven't reflected the football that they've been playing?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summation. I mean, they've obviously played some quality opposition in the last three games and, you know, were very close to both Fremantle and Hawthorn. And then obviously close loss again last week against Port. So I would think they're in good form. They're a good side. They're high on their pressure sort of around the ball and contest. So, we expect a pretty fierce contest come this afternoon.
So are you still are you running the midfield, Pikey?
No, I look after all the stoppages and structural side of the game.
Oh, mate, how good's that going, though? And so you got Pritty going beautifully. Shuey working to Nick Nat is just incredible. Have you seen better ruck work from a ruckman in your time?
Oh, look, Nick's a fantastic ruckman. I wouldn't mind sitting underneath him back in the day.
You and Evo, get out of my way, Evo, it's mine.
he's been in terrific form, and he's really... as I think I said a couple of interviews earlier in the year, he's been able to do a full pre-season, and I think we're just starting to see the real benefit of continuity in training for Nick, and that comes with performance, but also a bit of confidence, and he's now building on that, and he's doing some pretty unique and special things at the moment.
It's a big month, Don, isn't it, for the footy club? And Adam's mentioned that although you've got yourself into a really good position, some big tests coming up. Collingwood have got a really good record against you, particularly in Melbourne, and as Andrew said, their form recently is better than what their results suggest.
Yeah, look, we played them over here last year and it was a pretty close fought game. I think we were down by about 10 points and we haven't got a great record against them over here. So, it starts off what is there's no easy games in this caper, but it starts off what is a pretty big 4 or 5 weeks for us in terms of getting a real feel for where we sit. But that's part of the joy of being involved, is you want to test yourself against the best, and sort of starts for us this Arvo.
Game 100 for Andrew Gaff this week. Pikey, early in his career, did struggle with the tight tag, but he's certainly been able to overcome that in recent times. He's having an outstanding season. It must be wonderful just to watch him mature and really turn himself into an A-grade midfielder.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. He's always had that enormous running power, and has been his real strength. But he's just added a little bit to other areas of his game, and he's added probably a bit of flexibility. So he's not just sitting out on a wing all day and is a pretty easy target for opposition. He's sort of spending time through the midfield and through half forward and things. And I think the other thing that people underestimate with Gaffy is he's a tough little bugger. He's in and he takes the knocks and the hits and bits and pieces. He just keeps getting up and keeps running. So he's having a great year, and he's also benefiting from the fact that we've added some depth through the midfield. And so there's now, it's not just about closing down a Gaff or a Prittis or a Shuey. Now we've got Elliot Yeo going through there. Dom Sheed's having a really great year. Scott Selwood's back in. So all of a sudden you get enough numbers through there, and it's a bit of a weight of numbers, issue through the midfield for us, which is good.
Brilliant tribute on the weekend for Phil Walsh as well, mate. That crowd, I've never been prouder of a Subiaco crowd than the way they sort of went quiet when you had the big meeting in the middle with the Crows players, and then the standing ovation when the Crows came off was magnificent, mate. It was fantastic, wasn't it? Just brilliant.
It was really quite unique and quite moving. I mean, it's one of the strange experiences coming out of the coach's box when normally there's, club songs are playing and people are clapping and cheering, and it was this eerie silence. And then I thought the respect the crowd and our fans showed towards Adelaide in what was, you know, you can only imagine the trying circumstances for them. And yeah, it was a very unique and moving experience. So it was a real credit to the crowd and their way that they got behind the Adelaide guys and supported them.
Good on you, Pikey. Good luck today, mate. So it's 2:35 per time, of course, on 7. We'll speak to you again, mate.
Okay, thanks,
Bob. Let's talk cricket, though, the second Ashes test, and speak to the one of the cricket greats, the greatest cricketer ever to pull on a bat for Australia, Adam Gilchrist, joins us on the line. G'day, Gilly. How are you, mate?
Oh, I'm good, Barry. Hey, guys. How are you?
Yeah, great to talk. You been staying up late like Skeet and watching the cricket or not? You smart like us and go to bed?
Oh, no, it's kept me up a few times. I didn't quite get through to stumps last night, but, gee, I wish I did. It looked pretty exciting from what Mitch Johnson and Stark and the bowling unit bought on the back of, well, I guess a bit of a long overdue batting display like that. Our team is... The batting lineup's been reliant too much on one-out performances, where Smith's generally been that guy for about 18 months, and Clark prior to that. But that's a real team batting effort. Warner laid a nice little foundation, and then obviously that massive partnership. And then, Clark, he missed out. But that great for Peter Neville to come in and get some as well. And tremendous. Yeah, it's nice to see it flip back around after the doom and gloom of Cardiff.
Yeah, Gilly, I must admit, I got in trouble with my wife last night because it was after midnight and the wickets were falling and I was appealing like I was an Australian fieldsman. And she, can you just tone it down in the media room there? So I was in strike. They were 4 for 30 at that point. Look, end of the day, scoreboard pressure, whether it's footy, whether it's cricket, that seems to be so important. And in this case, England seemed to be weighed down because the pitch hadn't changed, but certainly their mindset had.
Yeah, you're spot on. It's just a mountain that you confront when you've post, when the opposition posts, you know, anything above 500 in that first innings. You're just very, very unlikely to be a chance of winning. So that's sort of almost eliminated from your mindset. And once that's happened, as attacking as England were in Cardiff, you're just basically playing for survival. You know, very few tests have been won where a team's conceded 500 in the first inning. So you're going out there, and even if the wicket is a road, which I don't know that the Lord's wicket is as benign and terrible, or, well, certainly flat. It's a bit benign. There's not a lot of life there for the bowlers in regards to pace and bounce. But even if it's an absolute road, if you've still just got that mindset of just surviving, you're starting to play out of your normal game plan, and that brings in, allows the opposition in. So they were, you know, really, really energetic, the Aussies, and I saw the highlights this morning. It just looked like, I think I could hear you appealing, Skeet, actually, all the way down here in Eagle Bay.
Gilly, can you tell us about Steve Smith in some rare form at the moment, playing some unbelievable cricket? But as a young kid coming through, you would have seen a little bit off him. Has he surprised you? Did you ever think that he was actually going to be playing the cricket that he's playing now?
Absolutely. Totally surprised me, Emma. I did not back him to get runs in Test cricket. I've got no drama putting my hand up, and I don't think I was on my own in surmising his technique and the way he goes about it and feeling that. He got into the short version of the game and gets away with it, and I just thought, nah, the good bowlers, the swinging ball, everything, it's just going to show him up. But And it did a little bit when he first came in 2.5-3 years ago. And like most players, he came in, had a taste, got told to go away and change a few things, tighten things up. And that's what he did. He didn't change his technique totally, but he just became a little bit better judge of the ball outside off stump. So he just lets the ball go now beautifully against Steyn and Morkel and Philander and those guys in South Africa. Last year, the ball was moving everywhere, but he just let it go, whereas previously he nibbled at it and was tempted to play a shot at it. So it's probably not a change of technique. It's more the judgment, the mindset required to succeed. And then eventually, if you just survive, your own game plan comes into it and they end up bowling to you where you want the ball to be.
Thanks for talking Ashes with us, Gilly. And good to see you survived the Gold Coast Airport Marathon. What was your time, G-Man, in the end?
3 hours 43.
And what was your wife's time, Gadam?
My 3 hours 43 was pretty solid, I thought.
Mate, 3 hours 43?
You're talk about the bonds of marriage and bond, you know, life with friends and trust and loyalty. Like, all through our training, it was specified, much to Mel's demand more than mine, like, we must stick together, we must cross the line together.
And she dropped
no
you
running off.
Off.
At 35Ks, I got this excruciating cramp in my calf. I must admit, I said, you got to go on, I'm struggling. And reluctantly, she did. I had to tell her, I had to convince her that our kids were really crooked in the night before with gastro, and I had to say to her, I think I've got gastro, I'm not going to make it.
Gilly, marriage is a marathon, trust me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Mel sprinted off, and she actually beat me by about 7 minutes. She did 3 hours 36,
wow.
The first ever marathon, which was unbelievable. She was amazing.
Mate, I know about marathons. That is a monster time, and so is yours, buddy. Well done.
Yeah, no, great. Thanks. It was just a fantastic thing to be a part of. It's a great event up there, but any, you know, so many people out there have done marathons, and I would encourage anyone to give it a go. Get it realistic in your mind, but it really is something worthwhile doing just once, and the training's a big commitment, but it's really fulfilling. It sounds horrible, but it's amazing once you put your mind to it. You just click in the gear, and something actually quite enjoyable to achieve.
3 hours 45. Try to beat that. That's a good time.
3 hours 43
there. It all counts. Good on you, mate. I might see it footy tomorrow. All
Thanks,
the best.
Gilly.
Yeah. Cheers,
Gilly.
Adam Gilchrist, one of the greats.
The Dead Set Legends, Mix 94.5.